Welcome back to the Restless Nomads RV Show. Mike and Angie here with ya. And we're talking about work camping this time around. Just a reminder that if you've missed the first half of this episode, you can catch this and all of the Restless Nomad RV Show episodes on goldcountryradio.org. Just click on show schedules and then hit Sunday, and there will be a player that'll pop up right next to the 2 o'clock time slot that this show is aired.
That's such a good feature to have.
It is. That way they can listen to it on demand. Mm-hmm. So it's time for the RV pro tip of the week. What are we talking about this week, honey?
Awning tips.
All right, awning tips.
Mm-hmm.
So, those RV awnings, wonderful things to have. We love our RV awning, right?
We do.
But it is testy.
Mm-hmm.
It is precarious. So there are a couple different types of RV awnings. There's the manual awning, and I almost prefer that. And then there's the automatic awning. And those are great, but man, you put a lot of faith into those, don't you, honey?
Yes, and you got to protect those awnings with your life.
Yeah, they are easy to damage,
mm-hmm.
for sure. I mean, you scrape it up against a tree, and what do you think is the biggest nemesis to an RV awning? The wind.
Mm-hmm.
The wind is the biggest nemesis. So one of the biggest things that we like about the manual awning is that it comes with a pull rod. And that's like a jack-of-all-trades, multi-use tool. I use that thing for everything, from pulling things out of the truck bed that I can't reach so I don't have to crawl in, to if something gets dropped and rolls under the trailer, I can just reach down there with that hook and pull it out. I mean, that thing is multi-use. I even bring it into our house and use it for different things around here. Even if I didn't have an RV, I'd still want that tool, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like a 36-inch long hook. It's pretty great. So the automatic awning, some of them have wind sensors on them, and they're supposed to pull the awning back in when it detects a certain amount of wind. But this would not work if you had a sudden gust of wind, because it takes a few, I don't know, 5 or 6 seconds for the awning to actually retract. So if you get a microburst or something like that and a huge gust of wind, really quickly it's going to destroy your awning anyway. And it'll probably destroy the frame, too, because it's going to be trying to retract it when that wind is blowing. So here's some pro tips for you. Always check the weather and retract the awning if there's wind in the forecast. And I'd say anything above about 10 miles per hour is all they can really handle with safely.
Mm-hmm.
Also, if you leave overnight, like on your days off when you're work camping, remember we made that mistake, babe? We left our awning out because we looked at the weather and we said, oh, it's not going to be windy. And what happened when we were driving back up to the campground after a couple days off.
Yeah.
And there was a thunderstorm and it just ripped the crap out of our awning fabric. And
the front of it.
Oh, yeah.
And
we cried.
We did. And that's the thing. Never be too careful.
Exactly.
So it's really okay to be overly careful because those are expensive to replace and repair.
They are. And, you know, some people go as far as they won't even sleep with the awning out. They'll put the awning back up before they go inside for the night.
Mm-hmm.
So make sure you put your awning up if you're going to leave overnight for one day even. I would put it up. Now, if you fail to do this and you get a good gust of wind and it rips the fabric alone is a pain in the butt to replace, and it's going to cost you about $200 to $300. If you have a shop do it, their labor rates are going to be $125 an hour minimum. And let me tell you, it's a real pain in the butt to replace that fabric. So you're probably going to want to make someone else do it, and you're probably going to have to shell out the cash. If you're unlucky enough that it damaged the frame on the awning, you're looking at $800 to over $1,000 for a manual awning full replacement,
mm-hmm.
and even more than that for an automatic awning because of all the motorization and things like that. So
I do got to bring up something funny. Yeah. At nighttime, do you remember when we had squirrels that would keep throwing pine cones and things like that on top of the awning?
Yeah, I do. And it would be like, pow! It sounds like a gunshot going off. That, yeah, I do remember that. It's funny.
It would wake us up every time. It was cute to watch during the day, but when you were trying to sleep at night, it was very noisy.
Yeah, it sure was.
But back to the
main topic. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Back to the safety of awnings. We want to get into what snow can do when it avalanches.
Ah, good point. So I didn't even think about that, but you're right. Don't have your awning out if it's going to snow, because it's going to weigh it down and it's going to damage not only the fabric, but most likely the frame, and you'll be stuck with that huge bill.
And that would be true for tarps, for...
Yep, those little gazebos.
Your screen tents that you have out so you can sit in there and eat outside.
Yep. Yep, that'll damage it all. Okay, so back to work camping, our main topic for today's show. We'll talk about when the best time to apply is. And this will depend on your location and the camping season in the location that you're looking at. So up here in the Pacific Northwest, Oregon, Washington, Idaho, summer is our main camping season. And the best time to apply for that, the best time to start really looking, is January.
And you want to start early because the jobs go extremely quick.
They do. Yeah. So especially the good paying ones with the nice amenities, the electricity and all that, those are going to go faster than the less desirable ones that are dry camping in a gravel pit or something like that. So don't wait. Get on it. Start looking in January. Now, if you happen not to have caught it by then, you're still in luck, right, honey?
Yeah, because there's times where a lot of people, they cancel or they have other plans that come up and they change their mind.
They do.
And so they will have availability for those jobs that come up.
Yep. And even mid-season, like that Lake Cochise job, I think we applied for it in June. We reported to work in July because the person that was hosting our campground didn't work out. So
and that happens a lot.
Yeah.
Some jobs just don't work out for people that's may not be meant for them. And
exactly.
They move on and it's okay. Other people can be used to be replaced if that's what you're interested in.
Yep. And it is one of those things. You will have moments when you're dealing with people, whether it's angry customers or a terrible bathroom, you're going to say, you know what? I'm so done with this.
Mm-hmm.
But if you persevere through it, just get through it, and at the end of the season, you'll look back on it fondly. It really is
a
good experience.
We have a lot of fond memories, and we really had rough times, but we had wonderful times. We made the most of it, and we got a lot of good experience.
Absolutely. Now, here's one thing to note. If the person that leaves or doesn't work out, whether they quit or they get fired, and they leave their assigned campground, if that is a coveted situation, there are going to be other hosts that are already there in that forest that will move to that better situation. So if you apply for jobs in June, July, don't expect to get the cream of the crop camping situation. You're going to get stuck with the least desirable situation. That's why it's a good idea to start looking in January.
We left out a big detail.
What's that?
And that's that you're going to have to be putting fires out in the morning. People will leave their site and they will not put their fires out all the way.
Yep.
Some people genuinely, they forget, and some people just don't care. And I put out 10 fires in 2 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because people were that neglectful.
Absolutely. So that's a part of the morning rounds.
Carry a big jug of water with you.
Yeah, and a shovel. Mm-hmm. All right, so now you know when to apply. Now, if you're in Arizona or somewhere hot like that, New Mexico, the camping season is typically going to be the inverse for the year. So it's going to start in like October, and it'll run until April. That's really good news for you full-time travelers. Yeah. And if you want a campground, you know, camp work camp all year round, you can if you bounce between the Southwest and the Northwest, or the Southwest and Colorado, you know, that kind of thing. There are those opportunities. So you can really be hosting a campground year-round and then just move twice per year. So some websites to check out if you're interested in work camping. There's workcampernews.com, and that's a pretty good resource. It is a paid site, and it has basically job listings. They're all vetted, and so that makes it really useful. I think it costs around $40 to $50 for 1 year subscription, and we've got both of our jobs on workcampernews.com. I highly recommend it. Cool Works and Happy Vagabonds are both free sites, and they may focus on things that are a little bit unique, not necessarily RV work camping. Sometimes they have youth programs for young adults that stay in cabins or in hostels and that kind of thing, and they can work, but they do have some RV camping jobs on there. So if you don't have an RV and you want to get started, these are really good places to check for these non-traditional travel type jobs. Also, a lot of campgrounds like private resorts and private RV parks will advertise job openings on sites like Indeed. And then there are concessionaires, and they typically have their own job listing, and you can just Google them. I'll give you three examples. There's the American Land and Leisure. They are popular in some of the national forests here in Oregon. There's Explore US, who we worked for up in Washington at Lake Cochise. And then there's Vista Recreation, which was formerly California Land Management, and we worked for them at Lava Lake. Mm-hmm. So,
and you want to make good friends with everybody, because that might give you the ability to have jobs the next year round.
Yeah, networking.
Networking is really good.
So get to know your fellow helps. Get to know your fellow hosts, because you're likely going to get some leads on jobs for the next season if you're looking for that. And by next season, that could be at the end of the season you're currently working, or maybe even next summer if you're going to go home to a house and return a normal life for a while.
Yeah, we actually, when we left Lake Cochise, we had our bosses, when they finished up, come and stay at our house for a couple weeks.
Yeah, they visited us. They were on their way to Arizona, and they were looking at land around here.
Yeah.
So pretty neat. Also, private resorts and parks, they often list job postings on Facebook groups. If you just look up work camping groups on Facebook, you'll see a lot of job postings there as well. And you can reach out to them directly. Usually they include their email. So there's that. So network with your fellow hosts and check out those sites. Let's talk a little bit about the pros and the cons of work camping. So would you say that we saved quite a bit of money when we were out in the woods, babe?
I think things kind of panned out in the end. Don't think that we saved a whole lot, and it was because we made sure that we had the best of fun. We spent a lot of money on rooms.
Oh, on our days off.
And
yeah,
groceries were spendy in Washington.
Yep.
And not only that, we had taxes, and that would be true with going out to eat.
Oh, the sales tax in Washington, which we weren't used to.
No, we weren't.
Yep. So there is that. If you're going to do your 2 days off and you're going to have a lot of fun and spend a lot of money, then you might not save a lot.
But it was a learning experience, and doing it next time again, we'll know what to do.
Well, yeah, and I don't regret it. I mean, we had awesome, unique experiences.
Right.
And we got to explore that area thoroughly. And we needed the night in a hotel room.
And we did, because we were dry camping, and we got pretty dirty at that point when it came to our days off.
Yeah.
Now, if you were to have a job that was not dry camping and they had bathrooms, you know, and showers, it really good facilities, then there would be no excuse not to save money, and you wouldn't really have to go to a hotel unless you were exploring.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, I think that.
Which is fun.
Yeah, I don't regret any of that. No. I liked the exploration aspect
it was
of it.
Fun.
But if your goal is to save money and you want to do this to save money, you can do it. You're not going to have nearly as much fun, and you'll be having people knock on your door on your days off. So just know that going into it. Now, you'll get one of the major benefits is meeting the different people, and we kind of discussed that earlier. You'll run into the coolest people with the coolest lifestyles and the coolest jobs, and most people out there in the woods are happy that they're out there, and so almost every interaction that you have is going to be filled with happy conversation. You will occasionally, very rarely, get the unhappy camper, to be cliche. Okay, let's talk about some challenges with the job. Physical demands, I would say that there is some. You'll have to be able to walk, even though you have a golf cart. Sometimes the golf cart won't get to places that you need to go, and so you'll need to be able to walk a little bit, and you may need to have a little bit of muscle and be able to bend over and like shovel out a fire pit and that kind of thing. Most of the campground host companies want you to be there for your entire working days. So even though you may put in, you know, hours between 8 and 5 or something like that, it's kind of expected that you remain available all the way until quiet hours, which typically start around 10 o'clock at night. So you're not really supposed to leave. Now, if you're a husband and wife team, then you can send one of you guys to the store while the other one is there and available to answer questions. So there's that, the time commitments. And then adapting to the various environments that you're going to be put in is a big one. Like Angie was saying, dry camping is really hard if you do it for an extended period of time. If you're aspiring to live like off-grid, then I think maybe this is a perfect opportunity for you to get a taste of that and to see if you can make it work. And some people love it. Don't get me wrong. We prefer having the hookups, at least electricity. And then there's the boredom that can come with that sometimes. You know, you're going to be out in the woods, and you're going to be expected to be available. And sometimes we just got bored, didn't we, babe?
We did. But, you know, I brought color pens, gel pens, and color books to do. We brought games and things to that nature. And yep. We did a lot of walking, and I did workouts using my phone. You find things to do.
You do,
but you do need to bring things to entertain yourself.
Yes. Bring plenty of... if you're not going to bring like Starlink or something to get your TV on...
Oh, that was so smart.
Yeah, then make sure you have a good DVD collection, because you're going to be watching a lot of those, right?
Yes.
And then, you know, it's always fun to cook in the camper too.
Oh, we got really creative.
We did. We've actually cooked an entire Thanksgiving meal in the RV. Uh-huh. And that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
And then we also talked about the days off and the area exploration, nights away from camp. That's also a huge pro. So there you have it. That's work camping in a nutshell, kind of from a campground host's perspective. Mm-hmm. If you have any questions, feel free to reach out to us at goldcountryradio@gmail.com. Email us your questions. We'll read them on the air for the next show. So that'll be fun. Let's talk a little bit about our campground and RV park review for this week. What are we reviewing, honey?
South Jetty RV Park. And that would be in Florence, Oregon. And that was on our Thousand Trails membership, where they have like 184 sites and some more spacious than others there. I like the fact that they had 30 amp power and water at most sites.
And sewer in some sites.
Yeah. And I also like, of course, the sewer in limited number of sites. And the dump station definitely had easy access. And me and my grandkids, we had an amazing time at the seasonal swimming pool. And I've got to say, too, that they had 2 year-round hot tubs that would likely fit about 4 people. They had 2 clubhouses, one with a shuffleboard, and they had a pool table. And then they had another clubhouse with ping pong. They had a playground, and the fence dog park was wonderful.
Yeah, it sure was. We liked all of that, the ping pong especially. I love ping pong. Also, mm-hmm. Verizon cell service in a lot of those sites, kind of an interesting dichotomy. If you want sewer, those sites down there typically do not get the cell coverage that you do up top without the sewer. So take your pick. You either talk on the phone or you empty your sewer. Also, that whole campground, you have kind of a challenging shot through the trees for Starlink and satellite TV. Firewood and ice is for sale on site. It's about a 3-minute drive from a convenience store and about a 10-minute drive to grocery stores and restaurants.
They have laundry facilities on site.
Good point. But about 10 minutes south of town. It's close to the sand dunes for ATV adventures for you guys with the toy haulers and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then for fishermen, freshwater fishing, there's a couple big lakes around there. Lake Wohink? Lake Wohink.
I've always had a hard time pronouncing that.
That's near Honeyman State Park. And then there's Silt Coos Lake. Just a little further south than that, and that's the largest lake on the Oregon coast. We took the boat to Silt Coos Lake last summer.
We did.
We had a blast. I didn't catch a fish. Not one. Your daughter did.
She did. It was pretty big.
Yep. She's the only one that caught a fish on that trip. Mm-hmm. And I was out there for 18 hours a day trying to catch a fish, and I had no luck. So... listen to Terrible at Fishing. I know I need to get on that. That Friday nights at 7 o'clock, Gold Country Radio, Terrible at Fishing, and then also available on the goldcountryradio.org if you're wanting to.
It's very educating.
Yeah, brush up on some fishing tips and tricks before you head out there if you're going to hit these freshwater lakes. Mm-hmm. And then they've got like crabbing off the dock near Old Town, right?
They do.
Yep, and then you can do some saltwater fishing in there too. Mm-hmm. So Old Town Florence, full of quaint boutiques, restaurants, all kinds of shops, gift shops.
Oh, that tea.
A little British tea place.
Restaurant. It was so quaint.
Yeah, it was cute. Bookstores and novelty stores, all kinds of cool things down there. Parking can kind of be difficult, so be prepared to do some walking when you go down there.
Coffee shops.
Yep.
Fish and chip places.
Yep. All kinds of cool stuff. Now, the cool thing about Florence is...
oh, and a movie theater.
Yeah, they do. North of there a little ways. Yeah. The cool thing about Florence is generally it's pretty tolerable weather in the shoulder seasons. Spring and fall are pretty bearable. It might be a little bit chillier, but that's all right. And the coast is chillier anyway. During the summer, that's the big draw. It stays 65 degrees over there when it's 105 in the Willamette Valley and close to 100 degrees in the Klamath Basin. So everyone and their mother heads towards the coast, and that can make for some very, very busy days, especially on the weekends over on the coast. if you're going to book a site at South Jetty RV Park in Florence, Oregon, do so early because it's going to fill up. Let's talk about the, so they're a Thousand Trails campground, and you can either pay the nightly rate, which is kind of expensive. I think it's like $50, which is sort of expensive. I mean, I guess these days RV resorts are selling nights for $85, some of them.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're going to do a lot of camping, you should look at the camping pass. You pay $605 for an entire year. So if you're retired and you can get away, and the cool thing about this is you can stay for 2 weeks at a time on this.
Mm-hmm.
And here's what we did this early on before we purchased a membership through Thousand Trails. We had a camping pass and we worked our way up the coast. So we went South Jetty, then we went to Newport and then Pacific City and Seaside. There's four campgrounds on the coast and then one in Sun River south of Bend. So, and you can move from park to park. I think with a camping pass, you have to be out for a week between the reservations. If you purchase the full-fledged membership, then you get to just move from park to park. And you get to stay for 3 weeks at a time, generally. But $605 for the camping pass, and if you like it, that might very well be worth it if you're going to camp quite a bit in that year. So, anything else you have to add on work camping or South Jetty RV Park, darling?
I do remember you got to be careful with your driving with your RV.
Oh, yeah. That's
in that particular one.
101?
It would be in certain areas.
Yeah, like Yahats.
Sure.
Yep.
And they do have games in the game room where you can do puzzles, and they have seating up there where you can eat with your family.
And TV with cable for football season, too.
Right. And they have spas. They have...
Oh, the saunas.
Saunas in each... Well, they call it spa.
Okay.
For men and women, but it's actually sauna rooms.
Yep.
So that's always nice, a nice addition.
Yeah, and all the Thousand Trails are a little bit dated, so don't go in there thinking that this is going to be like a modern resort, because it's not. It's definitely a campground. It's not a resort. But if you require hookups, you want hookups, especially electricity and water, and that is the biggest thing that you're paying for. And then South Jetty and pretty much all the ones on the coast are kind of the nicer campgrounds.
Yeah, I've seen that too.
Yeah, but you'll get the rustic feel because all the infrastructure is from the 80s.
Yeah, and the cabins are fairly decent too.
Yeah, they are. They are. And if you get a full-fledged membership, you actually get some benefits where you get to stay in the cabins 1 week free per year, which is kind of mm-hmm. huge. But the memberships are expensive. I'll just tell you that. So you really have to camp a lot in order to make it worth it. All right. Well, thank you for joining the Restless Nomads, Mike and Angie, this week as we talked about work camping and all the things that go into that, the pros, the cons, the loves, the hates, the different scenarios, and especially from our perspective as campground hosts, former campground hosts, you should check it out. Just start Googling work camping, get on YouTube, start watching videos, and check out the Restless Nomads YouTube channel. You can also check out the Restless Nomads Facebook page. That's facebook.com/Restless Nomads. Also, check out goldcountryradio.org. That's where you can hear this episode. If you're tuning in late, it'll be on the show schedules. Click Sunday, scroll down to 2:00, and right next to the Restless Nomads, you can listen to this and all of our other episodes. Thanks so much, Angie.
Thank you.
We'll have next week's episode on the way. Until next time, see y'all later.
Take care.